One of history's most notorious pirates is Captain William Kidd. His legend is tied to rumors of the buried treasure he supposedly left up and down the Atlantic coast from the Caribbean to Canada. But Captain Kidd insisted he wasn't a pirate. And in reality, he may not have buried much treasure at all. It's a complicated legacy, so allow me to do some unraveling. This is Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan. I'm usually on the road in search of stories and histories behind fascinating places in the Northeast. This season, though, it's all about ships and sailors and the ocean. We're calling it Off the Plank because, of course, some of the most famous sailors in history were pirates. Pirates like Captain Kidd. Well, if he even was one. There's a picture that comes to mind when I think of Captain William Kidd. Maybe you've seen it too. It's by the illustrator Howard Pyle. It shows Captain Kidd looming over some treasure chests on a desert island. He's dark and sinister, holding a flintlock pistol and staring out suspiciously while his crew digs a hole to bury the treasure. To be honest, I didn't know anything else about the guy. I just thought he went around burying treasure everywhere.
He definitely did have this legendary status.
That's historian Rebecca Simon.
But what's really interesting about Captain Kidd is that he doesn't really fit the archetypal pirate we think of, like the swashbuckling, cutlass-carrying pirate captain. He was a socialite. He had married very wealthy, so he dressed very finely.
William Kidd was from Scotland. He settled in New York City in the late 1600s and made his name as a respectable citizen, a war hero in a fight against France. His wife was one of the richest women in New York. Kidd was even an important financial backer of Trinity Church, one of the city's most renowned historic churches.
He was often seen to be very entertaining at parties and gatherings, very charismatic. A nice, respectable captain was something that high society really enjoyed. And they loved talking to Captain Kidd because of his stories of adventures in faraway lands that they'd only vaguely read about or vaguely heard about.
One of Kidd's elite friends was the colonial governor Richard Coote, the first Earl of Bellomont. Governor Bellomont for short. Bellomont was in charge of a huge swath of New England that included parts of New York, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire. And Governor Bellomont got Captain Kidd a job. A royal commission signed by King William III to do some work in the Indian Ocean. Kidd shipped out with high hopes.
He was a privateer. He worked for the British government, and he had a very excellent reputation.
Privateers are kind of like state-sanctioned pirates. They rob ships for the government.
A privateer works by a contract called a letter of marque. And the letter of marque says, you are working for us, the British Crown. You are going to go to the Indian Ocean and you are going to be robbing rival ships who might be taking wealth, such as the Dutch.
So he was really a pirate hunter.
You get to keep about 80% of all the loot you steal if you attack the ship. So it's a very specific contract detailing very heavily what ships that they are allowed to capture.
Captain Kidd got to the Indian Ocean with his letter of marque.
Now, the thing is, he's not having a good time in the Indian Ocean. They aren't capturing very many ships.
His crew got restless. They weren't getting paid, and they felt like Kidd wasn't keeping up his end of the bargain. One day, Kidd got in a fight with a crew member named William Moore.
Who is saying, you know, there's a ship in the distance. Go capture the ship, or else we're going to commit a mutiny. And Captain Kidd calls him a lousy dog, and Moore shouts back, if I'm a lousy dog, it's because you've made me so. And then Kidd picks up a metal bucket and cracks Moore over the head with it.
Moore died of his injuries. Kidd insisted it was an accident, but his crew was ready to revolt.
And in order to appease his crew, what he does is he decides to just start attacking any ship that comes across them.
Later, when he faces trial, Captain Kidd tries to make the argument that he was sanctioned to attack the other ships. Privateering carried a fair amount of ambiguity, but Kidd apparently went too far. He robbed ships belonging to the Mughal Empire, which ruled India at the time. That upset England. It didn't want to lose a valuable trading partner. He also robbed a ship called the Kedah Merchant, which had a confusing bill of ownership.
It was an Armenian ship that had been purchased by the French, but was being captained by an Englishman. This is a huge problem when Kidd ends up attacking it and taking the ship. Technically, he's violated his letter of marque by taking a ship being captained by a British captain.
The English government turned against Kidd and set off a worldwide manhunt for the man they'd suddenly labeled a pirate.
This manhunt is a huge deal.
The late 1600s was the advent of newspapers.
And people often read them aloud at pubs, and it spreads pretty far and wide. So pirates are often capturing people's imagination, you know, these criminals sailing in far off places, getting money. We're always attracted to that sort of thing.
So Captain Kidd became an unlikely and unintentional 17th century celebrity.
And this is when he knows he's in trouble. He sails to the West Indies. He offloads his ship. He sells the goods. He gets rid of his ship because he knows that's going to make him too recognizable. And he wants to try to get rid of any evidence of piracy as he can. But by the time he's arrested, pretty much everybody knows who Captain Kidd is.
And the stories of pirate treasure start to pile up. One place we know for sure some of that treasure ended up is Gardiner's Island, just northeast of the Hamptons. I remember the day I first saw Gardiner's Island. This recording was made almost 5 years ago on a very windy day on the Long Island Sound.
My name is John Edgington, captain of the schooner Mystic Whaler.
Captain Edgington pointed out the outline of the island as we sailed by on the schooner. I remember a hazy coastline with looming trees, not much more. The island is privately owned, so we can't set foot on it. In fact, Gardiner's is the largest island in the United States that's owned by a single family.
And it's been in the Gardiner family since 1636, when there have been 19 lords of the manor since then. And one of the more famous visitors that Gardiner's Island received was William Kidd, who landed there in 1699.
Kidd decides to offload his treasure on the island. It's the one place John Edgington knows where Kidd actually admitted to leaving treasure. Governor Bellamont told Kidd if he turned himself in, he'd have a fair trial. Kidd clung to his innocence, but first he needed to offload the gold he'd confiscated.
He knew better, I believe, than to sail into Boston Harbor with a boatload of treasure. He wanted a bargaining chip, and so he buried his treasure on Gardiner's Island. And with that, he sailed to Boston.
Captain Kidd didn't bury it in secret. He told the island's owner, John Gardiner. He even gave Gardiner's wife a length of gold cloth from India in thanks. Today it's on display at Sylvester Manor, a historic plantation on Shelter Island on eastern Long Island. And we know exactly what was buried there.
Two bags dust gold, one bag coined gold, one bag silver rings and precious stones. Two cornelian rings, three small agates, two amethysts, all in the same bag. Two bags of gold bars, two bags of silver bars.
Historian Eric J. Dolan says when Kidd left his treasure on Gardiner's Island, it wasn't the kind of thing you might see in a pirate movie.
That's not the same as, you know, sort of leaving buried treasure and coming back for it. That's because he didn't know what kind of reception he would get in Boston from the governor. He was a labeled pirate, so he didn't want to bring the most valuable thing he had with him before he could get the lay of the land.
Captain Kidd got to Boston, and his old friend Governor Bellamont placed him under arrest. Kidd continued to plead his innocence, saying, yes, he robbed ships, but he had permission to rob them. He was a privateer.
But it didn't matter, because by that time, the King of England had said, William Kidd is a pirate. He needs to be sent back to London so he can be put on trial. So Bellamont sends Kidd across the Atlantic in 1700, actually it was. The wheels of British justice grind slowly on, and about a year later, he's put on trial.
Kidd was found guilty of murder for killing William Moore with that bucket. He was also found guilty of piracy. And Eric J. Dolan thinks that was probably the right verdict, even if Captain Kidd wasn't much of a pirate.
A number of people think he wasn't a pirate at all. It gets into the minutiae of legal definitions. But whatever is the case, he wasn't really successful in doing what he was charged with doing.
And the trial is just, it's so nonsensical. You can read it online and it's just all over the place.
Historian Rebecca Simon.
Kidd maintains his innocence throughout. And his crew speaks out against him. No friends would come forward like Kit had hoped, so there were no character witnesses. Everybody abandons him and basically kind of throws him to the wolves.
Rebecca Simon says Kid's execution is basically public theater. He's led in a procession through the streets of London.
The head of the Admiralty is at the front of the procession carrying a silver oar.
That was the symbol of Britain's maritime court. They take him to the public gallows and they lead him up on the scaffolding.
It's expected Kid's going to give a speech where he's going to outline his crimes and his remorse and warn people of going into piracy. But instead, Kid is so drunk, he can't even really stand on the scaffold or speak. And so they hang him. And what's interesting is the rope breaks when they release the scaffold and he survives it. So then they have to do it again.
Kid's body was coated in tar and hung in full view from a pole over the Thames River as a warning to other pirates. It stayed there for at least 3 years. It was a grisly practice called gibbeting, and it was the fate of more than one pirate we've explored in this series. As for Kid's treasure on Gardner's Island, Governor Bellamont recovered it, but the rumors of buried treasure had already spread.
Of course, the idea that someone had buried or hidden a huge cache of coins and gold and jewels. This, of course, hits the newspapers, spreads like wildfire, and people immediately try to start searching for it. Kid becomes absolutely legendary. You know, here's someone who took all this money. He's buried it. Let's see if we can find it.
And more than three centuries later, fortune seekers still think it's out there. After a short break, the search for Captain Kidd's treasure continues on this season of Off the Path, or as we're calling it, Off the Plank.
Want to dig a little bit deeper into what's really going on in Connecticut?
Well, that's a complicated question.
I'm Ebong Udama. Every week on Long Story Short, I sit with some of the top journalists in Connecticut to find out what they're working on.
Yeah, so it was interesting how this story came about.
I think you'll see the legislature look at this again next
year. The money is still in the very early stages of coming to the towns.
Long Story Short from WSHU Public Radio and the Connecticut Mirror, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan. Charles Island is just off the coast of Milford, Connecticut. You can walk to it from a sandbar during low tide. I stand on the beach and look out at the island with Marissa D'Angelo, a second grade teacher and author.
We are looking at this beautiful island right now. The trees are not full anymore because of the season, and there's no boats docked there. It's completely deserted. Nobody is there. There are a few snowy owl nests on the top of the trees that you could see if you look closely. But yeah, very mysterious.
Marissa says people walk across that sandbar and picnic or hike on the island from time to time.
But they will also bring their metal detectors out to Charles Island, and they will try to look for Captain Kidd's treasure.
So why look at Charles Island? Well, Captain Kidd may have stopped here at some point, although there's no proof of that. And the island has its own lore, including a haunted resort, the ruins of a monastery, and multiple curses going back to indigenous times.
They did believe there were beasts there that haunted the island, so that was just a forbidden land to them, and they did warn the white settlers that came over not to build on that land.
All this inspired Marissa D'Angelo to write a novel about Captain Kidd and Charles Island.
He comes over this way on his boat. He sees this mysterious island, and he docks there with his men, and some of the men might go missing. I won't give too much away, but a lot of bad things happen on the island.
There are dozens of places like Charles Island where the legend of Captain Kidd has grown over the centuries into something larger than life. It's led to everything from people on beaches with metal detectors to multi-million dollar excavation projects. Historian Rebecca Simon.
So most claims about kind of sightings of or possible places where Captain Kidd might have offloaded his goods. These are places that kind of dot areas all up and down the New England coast, going up as far as Newfoundland, saying that, oh, he stopped here, he buried his treasure here. But a lot of that are rumors, and there isn't really any validity to it. There's no evidence of it.
There are a few rumored spots in Connecticut, aside from Charles Island, and there are places in New Jersey and Delaware, but the most famous is probably Oak Island, Nova Scotia, where dozens of people have spent millions of dollars over the course of centuries searching for a treasure rumored to be anything from Captain Kidd's gold to, no kidding, The Ark of the Covenant. A reality show about a crew looking for gold on Oak Island ran for 11 seasons on the History Channel.
Tonight, on The Curse of Oak Island.
That might actually be the thing that solves the mystery.
Oh, this is the first direct evidence of real treasure.
Yeah, that's not the only time the show promised evidence of real treasure. But they never found a single verified cent. In fact, no one's ever found treasure in any of the rumored spots, not Captain Kidd's treasure or anyone else's.
All of those stories are not true.
That's Eric J. Dolan again.
In fact, there's not a single instance that we know of any pirate during the Golden Age burying their treasure. Why would they? First, pirates often like to keep the treasure with them and spend it when they could. Second, if they buried their treasure, there's no guarantee they're ever going to return to that spot.
So what happened to all Captain Kidd's money? Dolan says Kidd probably sold or spent almost all of it in the Caribbean. So at least he got to have a little fun before his execution. The rest of it went to the owner of Gardner's Island, John Gardner, and he eventually turned over the gold Kidd gave him and went back to England in the possession of the crown. That's that. But Dolan says myths about buried treasure are obviously pretty exciting.
Who wouldn't want to go along a lonely beach and start digging and find gold doubloons and pieces of eight? It would be absolutely wonderful.
The trial and execution of Captain William Kidd made him a celebrity. Eyewitnesses spread the word in what today we'd call a media frenzy. And it was common in that time to tell sensationalistic news stories through these publications called broadsides.
And what that meant was there's a guy who's watching Captain Kidd on the gallows and hearing his story, you know, before they get him.
Lafayette Matthews is part of the folk trio, the Ranzo Boys.
So in order to tell this news, the great privateer Captain Kidd has been executed, he's going to write down everything that he's hearing, and he's going to print it, and he's going to sell it all over London and all over the countryside for a penny.
It was anonymous, and it was written in song form. This is entertainment, not journalism.
Definitely massages the facts for dramatic effect.
The song became a hit, and folk groups like the Ranzo Boys still sing it today. Thanks for listening to Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan, and here's Captain Kidd.
My name was William Kidd, as I sailed, my name was William Kidd, as I sailed. My name was William Kidd, God's laws I did forbid, and most wickedly I did, as I sailed, and most wickedly I did. As I sailed from sound to sound. As I sailed, from sound to sound. I sailed from sound to sound, and many ships I found, and most of them I drowned. As I sailed, and most of them I drowned. As I sailed, and I murdered William Moore. As I sailed, and I murdered William Moore. As I sailed, I murdered William Moore, and I left him in his gore, not many leagues from shore. As I sailed, not many leagues from shore. As I sail to Newgate, I am cast and must die and must die. To Newgate, I am cast and must die. To Newgate, I am cast. In chains they bound me fast to receive my just desert. I must die, I must die to receive my just desert. I must die. Take a warning now by me, for I must die, I must die. Take a warning now by me, for I must die. Take a warning now by me, and shun bad company, lest you go to hell with me. For I must die, I must die, lest you go to hell with me. For I must die. My name was William Kidd, as I sailed, my name was William Kidd, as I sailed. My name was William Kidd, God's laws I did forbid, and most wickedly I did, as I sailed, and most wickedly I did, as I sailed.